communication seems to me to be a whole new dimension in the way people could relate to each other. Voltaire once said, if there were no God, it would be necessary to invent one. And I have the feeling that if there is no ESP, it may be necessary to invent it. And I think you're the people who are going to have to do it. Thank you.
And perhaps you'll think it's more futuristic than present. I'd like to introduce John Whitney, who is a pioneer computer filmmaker and graphics artist. He's been working at it for, I think, perhaps 15 or 20 years now, including working under grants from the Guggenheim Foundation, the National Endowment for the Arts, and then that obscure corporation called IBM. He started out working with Monster Machines, and now he works with a machine in his home, just like many of us do. But he produces very exotic computer graphics work. Among other things, he invented the slit scan technology that was used in some of the flashes out of 2001. He's a lecturer in the art department at the University of California in Los Angeles. And I think you will be delighted with his presentation. John Whitney.
Thank you, Jim. Being a lecturer at a university, I'm going to give you a sample lesson. I think it's possible now to do a kind of a music appreciation course or something similar to that, and to try to bring out some of the kind of potentials that exist with the computer graphics capability that we have already today for creating a visual art that would have some sort of valid structure in time. And the real source of inspiration for anyone thinking in this direction has to be music, because it is the really definitive art that just goes on in time and has a its essence is its temporal structure. So let's start with a little film that I'll try to describe and talk about when we're running it. I think we ought to put out, before you start the projector, let's blow out the candles and try to get the room as dark as possible. Where would the lights be? Well, this is a little exercise or demonstration that consists of 24 hexagonal figures that are mounted concentrically, and they're going to start on a little race course around a circle. The largest one, the 24th, is going to go 24 times faster than the smallest one, so that 24 will go around, or the largest one will go around 24 times, the smallest one will go around once. And up there is a little white dot which is functioning as a sort of a clock. And so now, with those rules, let's follow what happens a quarter of the way around. They've divided themselves into four, and so this suggests something. What happens when it gets a third of the way around? Now they've divided themselves into three. Already you can guess what will happen when they get halfway around. Halfway. (Laughter) There's no magic to this, and it's a very simple thing, and it's interesting that it has a lot of ramifications, and I'll try to suggest some of them. But we'll continue with picking up the fractions. From now on, we've seen the last half. There can only be one half. We've seen the last third. We're going to watch the fractions as they continue on around. There's the last quarter, the last four. The next will be five. And now I'm going to sort of step so that you can see what's happening to the figures a little bit. Actually, we're passing other fractions, but we're not stopping, and so you don't realize it. Here we are, five. We're going on, I'll tell you, we're going on right on through six, seven, eight, and nine. One, two, three, four, five, six. Seven. One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight. I've learned how to count complex patterns like this. You start at the top, one, two, three, four, five, going on the sides, and then the next two, you pair them off. How many was that? I guess that was the ninth. And now, just guess what happens. While he's threading the next film, I want to turn on this machine here and describe a little bit more. You see, there is nothing magic about that. This is a straightforward arithmetic. If you start any plurality of figures going around some sort of a race course, and their relationships are simple, like the number 24 is going 24 times faster, number 23 is going 23 times, and 22, 22 times, and 1, 1 time. These are inevitable developments that take place. I'd like to describe some of that with this projector here. Now here is the 360 points around a circle. On the right, on my side, at the bottom, is point number one. On the left, at the bottom, is point number 360. Is that focused? You can't separate the points, though. They're so close together that you can't distinguish them. But suffice, believe me, it's true. And now they're starting to move in an X direction. And point number 360 is moving 360 times faster than 1, and so it has moved this far at this point. I've arbitrarily stopped here to show you the progress. We'll pick it up now and start moving. And when it reaches the border over here, it jumps across by a modulo procedure, so that when it reaches the extreme at the right, it jumps across to the extreme at the left and starts on, always going to the west or to the right. Now I'm stepping it and see one of the other, up in the circle, some other points have reached that border and jumped across to the left. Soon we reach the first lapping. In other words, 360 has gone 1/360th of the entire cycle and passed. Now I'm backing up to review that and show you how that works. All right, starting again. It moves out, hits the border modulo, and jumps back and comes across, laps now, and forms a symmetrical pattern. Goes on and laps again and forms another symmetrical pattern. Goes on and laps again, another symmetrical pattern. And again, this is about the fifth, I guess, time. And it's going on 6, 7, 8, 9. Now you can see the points. They're beginning to spread out in this racetrack. And as you see, with the fastest ones lapping the slower ones, it's going to continue with this process. And it's going to do exactly the same as those hex figures did. We're not going to go all the way because this is a very slow one, but we'll go to the first fraction. We're going to come, not to the first fraction, I'm mistaken. We're going to come to the first quarter fraction, and I'm going to arbitrarily stop at that point. Coming up. Now, this next section is some black and white printing from the actual film that we're going to see at the end of this talk. These are just some of the sequences that are involved. Now, here's that process that we've just been seeing at work. It reaches the first lapping position and then goes through an east and west X and Y transformation in its symmetrical form. Now it progresses on, and at this point reaches the second lap and goes through another symmetrical transformation. At this point, I cut and reverse the direction, and now the same figure, enlarged, is being returned back to the second lap, going through its symmetrical operation. And then on back to its starting point. Now here's another example. Thank you. Here's another example. At this point it arrives at a third and we take off. Now I got to speak very quick. The one on the left is the fifth. There it comes, the fifth. On the right is the fourth. That just passed. In the middle is the third. And then comes the next fifth on the left. The halfway point on the right. The next fifth, the third fifth. And then the third, the second third, and the last fourth, and then the last fifth, and now they all come back, completing their cycles. They've all done the same fractional cycles in the exact same period of time. This is the same phenomenon. However, I'm jumping, and I've inverted it, and I can squeeze them or contract them and use them in a variety of different ways. These are the symmetrical kinds of actions. And now, once again, this same material is used small. Here we are, starting out again, just the same way it was at the beginning of the film. But now it's been reduced very small, and it's laid out as a pentagonal figure. So it arrives at in a sort of a canon to five segments in canonical form. And now they take off all moving in together. And at this next point, they're going through the second lap. Now they're going to go through to that same point that they did at the opening, and now they're going to reverse themselves and come back and undo just the way they did themselves up. Second lap, symmetrical action. And now returning to the circle, one at a time, and canon again. Now, while we're threading the next one, maybe there are some questions now. Yes? I'll get to you.
What?
The window. Well, that's just an arbitrary, you know, I think if you've had any experience with CRT graphics, you can define the frame or the window. And so the picture is allowed to go to that predefined limit and then required to jump back to... What were the limits? Well, it's just an arbitrary figure comfortable inside the frame. How's too general a question? I mean...
How close are we to being able to do it with our own machines in our own homes?
Yeah, that's good. Well, I've been using... I was loaned by Tektronix a 4051 in through the winter of this year. And I found it quite satisfactory. The interesting point is I had been arguing for the last two or three years that having practically ruined my health and experiencing working midnight hours from midnight on over these many years, being the lowest creature on the hierarchy of big central systems, that I could do 10 times the work with a machine that went 10 times slower than the ones I've been accustomed to. And that's about the way it is. The 4051 is certainly a satisfactory machine. And the first half of the film that I'm working on now was done there with the 4051. Yes, Ted. They are speeding up on a sine curve, and then they slow down. I've got that part of the sine curve. And indeed, they are only moving in X direction.
Which is predefined when you have a pentagonal split, according to that.
Yeah, that arrangement there is the liberties that I can take with my own optical printing capability. After I generated the original material that you have been seeing, I subsequently re-photographed that in the optical printer using color filters and color film. And at that point, I can reduce the size, I can position it any place I want, and I can run it forward or backward.
Now, can't you do that with 4051 basic?
No, that's too much for the 4051 basic. And in fact, we've got to go a little bit farther before we can do that sort of thing as a practical secondary level of programming. It's not by any means out of the question. In fact, it's the most logical thing to happen, but it hasn't happened. At least I think it would be just tediously, just hopelessly too slow on a 4051.
So all that, your basic circle, and like you were doing your pentagonal thing, you got it all done in optics.
Yeah, the positioning. Right. My procedure has been for all these recent films to acquire, as I am again right now, sort of a library of basic actions, and then I work with them almost a doubling of the period involved in generating those on the computer. You spend another equally long period and tiresome period in my own optical printing. No, my originals are on 35 millimeter black and white film, and I reduce to 16 I work in 16 color exclusively. Are we ready with the next film? Oh yes, down with the lights.
Who knows which ones they are?
Good.
Overkill. All right, these are some outs from the film that we're going to see. Here we are with, now the light greenish blue one is going to the, as you see, to the west, to the right, and the blue one is going to the left. They are going through a fractional sequencing again. In fact, they're going through eighths. And each time they arrive at one of the fractions, they go through an X and Y transformation of some sort. In this case, it's been reduced in Y. So there we are at the, I think this is the next eighth. Now this is, These are the eighths. Then I think the next will be the halfway point. Yes, so it only comes down to two. It's one in the middle and two halves, making it just two. The blue is following along as a sort of a canon and in opposite direction, in sort of counteraction.
Why did you choose the opposite point these particular
six? Well, it was a lot of fun. Ask me why I didn't use it in the film. That's harder to explain. But it, all right, that was a reducing X and Y both to go through that transformation at that point. And now I think we're coming back, completing the cycle. This is more of the same. You can see how, see, I can copy, this is just one sequence that I can use in all these different ways by combining it. So I get a lot of mileage out of one little bit of computer stuff. There we are at that same grouping of four that I showed you in the earliest. But I'm established by showing you these. I'm showing you how it can go through. Go to one of the fraction points and then go through these other kinds of transformations, changing them in X or in Y. In this case, that was Y. I mean X. I can never remember. Is X east? X is east and west.
These are routes I take
from. Yeah. we're going to show you a couple of these because this is getting close to a sequence that I finally used in the film, and I'd like to just describe it. It's a straightforward canon of these groupings that arrive at fifths all the way, and you produce the five. It's going to do it again, and then I'll try to describe how it starts. Because it's just the same thing starting over itself every 30 seconds, or every 30 frames. Now they've arrived at the end. Now we're going to start again. Oh, I'm sorry. It's a couple. I don't know why this is in here.
How much time does it take you to do one little thing like this?
Well, the machines I've been working with have never been anywhere near real time. It takes usually 2 to 3 seconds to display one frame like this on the computer.
What about the programmer?
I have had very good fortune in having people to help me in programming. Larry Cuba is the one who was working with me all through this time. These were all done at Information International down in Culver City. Well, that's a real question because now here we are. It started blue, and then the amber, and then oh hell. Anyway, why talk about it? But suffice it to say that they're following 30 frames behind, one 30 frames behind the other in a straightforward canonical sequencing. Yes, haven't I?
What exactly does it mean?
All right. That's a commonplace form of music. Now they're going to reverse. A canon is where you make one statement of the melody, and then, like, a piano will start out and state the melody. César Franck has a nice duo sonata for
for violin and piano that states it, and then either the piano states it, the violin, after the first measure has been stated by the piano, the violin exactly reproduces the same statement, but with the extra quality of the violin. And the entire, several of the movements of that work of César Franck are straightforward canons. In fact, you sing Frère Jacques. It's a round. It's another name for it. Okay, so much for the outs. Now we're going to run the film, and so much for the talk. But at the, once again, you have a question? No, I don't think I would have. No, I feel very strongly that what we have here is a new source of instrumentation and for a new kind of art. I'm not very hot on the idea of computers doing art any more than that. I was always enthusiastic about the way pianos play sonatas. Well, that's my point. I'm trying to say that we have our hands on that another huge domain of resources, harmonic resources, that really parallels the domain of harmonic resources that the composer has known for 10 or 15 centuries and for every culture around the world. Music is a very, very universal human phenomenon, and it's been a great delight for everyone. From almost, well, children are born with the Muzak running over the hospital. So that's where it begins. And they sing hymns when you die, so it's with you pretty much from the cradle to the grave. And I'm thinking that somehow we're getting very close to the same sort of a rich mine of resources for a visual art now. Yes? I would hope to see more control, and I hope that this is a clue to ways of getting into control, and I'm sure that is going to be the kind of development that will take place.
Are you acquainted with the Lovelight thing that's being done in Boston, the lasers and laser control in the planetarium?
No, but I suspect it's very much like the one that's out at the Laserium at Griffith Park, and I think the same company. They've been enormously successful, and they have them at Planetaria or around the country now. Oh, yes. Next question. Yes? Well, I think so, but did you hear the question? The question is, could we do this with analog systems and in real time? It's a complex and it's an involved question. It has to do with the nature of art, in a sense. I don't want to get pompous about it, but the problems are, take, for example, look at the situation of Beethoven. Beethoven probably was 6 years old, was starting to hammer on a piano. He probably was playing very well by age six. He was training a mind, hand, ear relationship and developing a kind of skill which paid off for him. By the time he was in his teens, he was a European novelty of great value. He was in the courts, he was entertaining. He was a very important improviser. He was able to play all evening with pure improvisation, and he had a famous reputation. He could have died happy just with the success of his art of improvisation. And yet, on the contrary, that same man devoted himself to the most unbelievably agonizing reworking of the compositions that we know of from him today. In other words, there's a direct need for true interactive man-machine communication and training, which is what you get as a child learning to perform with any of the musical instruments. But then finally, the art of composing music that really has validity and really sticks on your mind